Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast from WNYC in New York.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Happy 2015. We obviously talk to a lot of musicians about music on Soundcheck, but did you know that non-musicians like music too? It's true. In fact, some of 2014's biggest authors stopped by our studio last year to talk about the songs that moved them, inspired them, or soundtracked their books. It's a feature we call Pick Three, and we thought we'd start the new year by listening back to some of last year's best authors talking about their favorite music. We start with David Mitchell. He's the English author of Cloud Atlas, and most recently, the critically acclaimed The Bone Clocks. It's a time-traveling polyphonic brick of a book. I mean, it's big and totally transporting. All of his books name-check a huge array of musical artists and styles, so I was curious what he'd bring with him. His first pick for us was Heaven, the 1979 song by Talking Heads, which actually makes an appearance in The Bone Clocks.
Realize that music can do what books also invite you to do, to think and to take you on a kind of a story or a journey, and do more than that. Sort of, if literature could do exactly what music does, then you wouldn't need music.
But it's, and possibly vice versa.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Writers are often very jealous of musicians. They get to perform in front of their audience rather than absently at long distance at great removes in time and space. Fabulous record. It sounds better now than it did then. For me, it was a record that taught me that rock, pop music can be cerebral. It can invite you to think and swing and have rhythm and have that propulsive force and that transporting force that the best music does. This music's called After the Rain, and it makes me smell a garden after the rain. When I hear this, especially when the flute starts, I can I'm in a garden all wet with rain, and I've been. This piece of music for me is a place, and I've been to this place. I've been listening to it maybe 30 years. This piece of music's been in my life.
Conclude with Patrick Watson, the Canadian musician and songwriter.
Yeah.
What do you like about his work and The Great Escape?
Bad day, looking far away, home, looking for The Great Escape. Gets in his car and drives away, far from all things that we are.
His voice is just one of those you immediately arresting, distinctive voices, its truffles, its dark coffee, its velvety. It's just a beautiful, divine gift of a voice.
Always says bye, bye, bye to all of noise.
This song's called The Great Escape, and for me a book is a great escape, no matter what else is going on in your life. All books, in a way, are wardrobes into Narnia. They're all ways into another world, and reading's a great gift, like music.
Hey child, things are looking down. That's okay, you don't need to win anyways. Don't be afraid, just eat up all the grey, and it will fade away. Don't let yourself fall down.
Reading can be like a wardrobe into fantasy worlds like Narnia or David Mitchell's brain, but it can also be a hyper-realistic window into places in this world that you may not be familiar with. Case in point, Marlon James's riveting novel, A Brief History of Seven Killings. It is neither brief, nor does it stop at seven killings, but the book's central event is the real-life assassination attempt on reggae superstar Bob Marley in 1976. The Jamaican-born James brought us a bit of a soundtrack to his gritty, brutal look at ghetto life in Kingston, starting with Marley's autobiographical song, Ambush in the Night.
They keep us hungry.
The thing is, it was just an unwritten rule. Nobody touches the tough gong.
Tough gong being
Bob Marley.
Bob Marley's.
The great thing about his house was that people who only a day before would have been trying to kill each other would be hanging out, breaking bread, discussing music and so on at his house. The prime minister used to drive down and chill.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that the one neutral ground in all Kingston could be shot up was just so unheard of, and it was just such a turning point, and this song speaks to it pretty directly. Writer, I'm always interested in the margins, and I'm always interested in the characters who will not make the history books. And I talk about this short, this article I read once that Gay Talese wrote called Frank Sinatra Has a Cold.
Right.
It's my favorite article ever. I think it's probably the best piece of American journalism ever. And because he couldn't get Sinatra. He couldn't get Sinatra. And it suddenly hit him, what if I just talk to everybody around him? And then this whole portrait of Sinatra emerges. At one point, Sinatra actually contacted him. I go, I hear you're talking to people about me. So it's kind of if doing the same thing, mm-hmm. doing this sort of Bob Marley has a cold.
Back, yo. No shoes on my feet now.
mixed little dumpling. A crucially crucial.
That is Bunny Wailer from the early 80s, a song called Crucial, picked for us by Marlon James, author of the new novel A Brief History of Seven Killings, which spins out from the attempted assassination of reggae legend Bob Marley into a sprawling portrait of life in Kingston, Jamaica. Tenor Saw, I don't know this name. Who is this?
Tenor Saw was one of the first major post-Marley figures to emerge, but not not from the roots reggae camp. He was from the street again, dancehall. This song is about sound systems. It's a song about, it's a dancehall song about dancehall culture.
Whoa, hey, some sound like a big jump on. Listen to sound, it's a champion. Run the dance in any session. Rock up the woman and rock up the man. Ring the alarm, another sound is dying. Whoa, hey, ring the alarm, another sound is dying. Whoa, hey, T-Tato, we beat them all in a row.
Reggae, up to that point, this, for all its merits, was still kind of the music of people who could afford their instruments. Dancehall artists couldn't afford that. Dancehall's instrument was flipping over the reggae B-side, which was usually the instrumental, and rapping, basically, right, on top of that.
Four big sound in a one big lawn. The dance on a play, the other three keep calm. Four big sound in a one big lawn. The boom sound a play, the other three keep calm. Ring the alarm, another sound is dying.
Whoa. The song we're going to end with is Damian Marley.
Yeah.
The song called Welcome to Jamrock. What's this about for you?
The thing with Welcome to Jamrock, not just because it's you bookend with a Marley, is that this is a song that sort of summed up how far we've come. And it wasn't very far. Some of the stuff that you'll hear in Ambush in the Night about suffering and what the desperation suffering leads to, Damian Marley is basically saying it's still there. So it's kind of a summing up how far we've come since his death.
Bedtime stories, and pose like them named Chuck Norris. And don't know the real hardcore, cause sandals are no buck to. He talks them way to where them got to. And won't think twice to shot to. Don't make them spot to. Unless you carry guns a lot to. A dear tough thing come at you. When trench town man stop laugh and block off traffic. Then them we learn pop off and them start trap it. We dip in file long and it a beat trap it. Police come in a jeep and them can't stop it. Some say them a playboy rabbit. Get chop like a bad habit. Son of a da post off if you're down top it. Rastafari stands alone.
Another of our guests this year was BJ Novak. He's what you might call a quintuple threat. You may know him best as the actor who played the temp, Ryan, in the NBC TV series The Office. But he's also a comedian, a screenwriter, a director, and now an author. He joined us last February to talk about his book of short stories called One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories. We started by talking about Elvis because he's the topic of a story entitled Quantum Non-Locality and the Death of Elvis Presley.
The story goes down much easier than the title. But that's a story about sort of late Elvis, which I always was fascinated by. And I didn't really realize that until I started the book. I was never an Elvis guy. But I was constantly, and Elvis appears in several stories in the book.
Right.
I didn't know why. But there was something to me about being Elvis, being a mythological thing, and the human being who had to be something as big as Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
You know, he really was, or as big as Mickey Mouse. If you click around on iTunes and find late Elvis covers, it's unbelievable that Elvis did certain songs, and he seemed to misunderstand them so profoundly. He's still Elvis, the big heart of this American performer is still there. But he does a version of Something by the Beatles, and the first two lines he sings are, something in the way she moves attracts me like no other lover. Ha, ha, damn. Just so out of place in this sensitive song. And he also covers Bob Dylan.
Right.
Elvis Presley covers Bob Dylan late in life. There was a time when that actually happened. And he has a cover of one of my favorite songs of all time, Don't Think Twice, It's All Right. And again, he seems to fundamentally misunderstand it. He does it in a very rollicking, upbeat way, messes up some of the lyrics and keeps going. He has no understanding of, it seems, of the subtle pessimism and sadness of this song.
When the rooster crows at the break of dawn, look out your window, baby, I'll be gone. You're the reason I'm traveling on here. Don't think twice, it's all right. I'm heading down that long, lonesome road, girl, where I'm bound, I can't tell. Goodbye's too good a word, girl, I just say farewell. I ain't saying you treated me unkind. You could have done better, but I don't mind. You just sort of wasted my precious time. Ooh, don't think twice, it's all right. Take it on.
If I could start all over again, I would 100% be a songwriter. I think it's the best form of writing in just about every way. It's the most important. It's the most satisfying. It gets you the most recognition. It's the most beautiful. It's the most timeless. And it's the most perfect way. I've always envied songwriters that they can have a shot at expressing, coming up with the perfect expression of a single emotion or thought or observation.
Yeah.
If you notice something that no one's noticed before and you write a song about it, you have a shot at, for all time, having to find it.
I sleep in late another day. Oh, what a wonder. Oh, what a waste. It's a Monday. It's so mundane. What exciting things will happen today.
So let's get to the second pick in your pick three, which I was really pleasantly surprised to see that you picked the Australian singer-songwriter Courtney Barnett.
I love her. I play her all the time. I play, this is my favorite song, Avant Gardner, but I love this whole album. I love everything she's put out. It's so wry, raw, just great.
Yeah.
I could listen to her all day.
The nice lady next door talks of greenbacks and all the nice things that she wants to plant in them. I want to grow tomatoes on the front steps, sunflowers.
BJ Novak's my guest on Soundcheck, sharing a Pick 3 playlist with us today. Now, there's a trailer for the book as well, which is hysterical.
Thank you.
Much of it is hysterically badly dubbed in French.
Yes.
And your third pick for us is a French band. What is it with you and the French?
I don't understand a word, but I love it. And I love not being able to understand it, because to me that is the mystery that we need in our lives. There needs to be something that you don't understand at all, but you wish you could be in that world. And for me, that is everything classically French. That is the fashion, the literary glamour, all these things. And I went to Paris and didn't talk to a soul, didn't understand anything, just kind of looked at everybody and felt like, oh, this is cool, this is cool. I guess you need something like that in your life. So that's what the French stuff is for me.
So this band is called Niagara,
mm-hmm.
French kind of synth pop. They sound like the Eurythmics to
yeah.
me. And the song is called Pendant que le champ brûlant.
I could never have said that. This was the ultimate internet discovery for me. I heard this on an internet radio station. I Shazammed it and I put it on my Spotify. And I never understood a word, and I listen to it all the time. I just love it.
Do you want to know what it means?
What does it mean?
While the fields are burning.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Des arbres se penchent plus fort que tout. Accrochés aux branches, l'herbe semble encore.
So far, we've heard from a Brit, talked reggae with a Jamaican, and BJ Novak was just telling us about his obsession with the French. The author Emma Straub visited us in June to talk about her excellent book, The Vacationers, which is set on the Spanish island of Mallorca. She chose, as the epigraph for her book, a line from the song Desert Island by the New York band The Magnetic Fields, and she explained that her attraction to the band started in college at Oberlin.
You didn't have to get grades and you didn't have to wear shoes, but you did have to listen to The Magnetic Fields.
And longtime listeners to Soundcheck have heard Stephen Merritt and the band Magnetic Fields here in our studio on numerous occasions over the years. You've actually been here with him, right?
Yes, I have. I've been lots of places with Stephen. I was his personal assistant for many years. And after that, I would go on tour with him with my husband. My husband and I were the merch team. And so we traveled around with the band, sold the T-shirts. And I chose a few lines from this song as an epigraph for my book.
And what lines are those?
I'll be the desert island where you can be free. I'll be the vulture you can catch and eat. So it's, you know, beautiful, slightly sinister.
Typical Stephen Merritt.
Love music, and I definitely think about what the characters are listening to and that sort of thing. In this book, the characters are often driving around Mallorca, and there's always some like disco on the radio, which is actually true in my experience, that you can always find Elton John or the Bee Gees on the radio in Mallorca. So I was thinking about that sort of music as I was writing.
So in your playlist for us today, your pick three, you picked this song from Beyoncé.
Well, so as I mentioned, I had a baby recently, and I've been thinking a lot about working women and how women make it all happen. And obviously, I'm sure Beyoncé has excellent childcare. But when I hear this song, I think about a woman who works really, really hard and who's aware that she's supposed to wake up feeling a certain way and looking a certain way, and maybe she doesn't. I love Beyoncé. I think she is an icon for the ages. I am a big fan.
I woke up like this. We flawless. Ladies, tell them I woke up like this. I woke up like this. We flawless. Ladies, tell them say I look so good tonight. Goddamn, goddamn, say I look so good tonight. Goddamn, goddamn, goddamn. Mama taught me good home training. My daddy taught me how to love my haters. My sister told me I should speak my mind. My man made me feel so goddamn fine. I wake up, post up.
That song actually is my 10-month-old son's favorite song.
My diamond, there's a rock, my rock. I woke up like this. I woke up like this. We flawless, ladies.
So I am a really big fan of the television program Nashville, starring Connie Britton, my personal goddess. And when my husband and I and baby and I went to Nashville this spring for me to teach, I thought, okay, I just need to find the cast of Nashville. That is what is going to make this sojourn totally worth it. And it took me a long time, but eventually I did manage get a ticket to a concert at the Ryman Theater in Nashville that was the cast performing songs that they would then sort of later edit together and air
and put into
the
show.
Yeah, and it was phenomenal. What I love the most about about Nashville, the city, and Nashville, the show, is how the songwriters really are the stars. If you drive down Music Row in Nashville, which is, you know, this street where there are all these little bungalows filled with songwriters and producers and publishing houses.
It's a horizontal Brill building.
Yeah, it is.
The vertical
it,
exactly. one we had here in New York.
Exactly. And they have enormous posters up celebrating, you know, this songwriter who's just written this hit for somebody. But they don't even say, you know, Emma Straub wrote this song for Taylor Swift. They just say, Emma Straub wrote this song. Hooray, it's a hit.
I thought things couldn't get much worse, but guess what they did? You hear my heart upside with a wrecking ball. Oh, but that's what I get.
They do love that Nashville really loves its songwriters and appreciates them. And I love this song that Hayden Panettiere sings on the show.
This time it's goodbye trouble. I feel the light at the end of this tunnel. I get stronger with every step. Come hell, come high water, you push on me, I'm gonna push back harder. I got a whole lot more than a little bit left. Oh, so don't put dirt on my grave just yet.
That's Don't Put Dirt on My Grave Just Yet by the cast of Nashville. We hope you've enjoyed this sampler of our author interviews from 2014. It's really just the tip of the iceberg. Listen to extensive conversations with Francine Prose, Philip Meyer, Jonathan Lethem, Amy Tan, John Darnielle, Billy Collins, and many, many more over at soundcheck.org. And subscribe to our podcast in the iTunes Store so you don't miss another chance to crawl inside the musical worlds of your favorite authors. Thanks for listening. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.